Yo. Yo, what do you want? Beak or jaws? Feathers or fur? Sharp teeth or feet with claws? Whatever's preferred. They'll grant you all last requests to steady your nerves. Then podcast the body parts get severed and served. Bring your weak shit where the wolf and owl are. That ain't just a mistake, that's an awful howler. Both of them are known to pull up at your shows. Have the crowd witnessing a murder like they rolled in with a gang of crows. Fuck the censorship, let them see the whole thing. They stay dressed to kill, never sheep's clothing. Dark enough to turn the sun to the moon. You'll see nothing, all you hear is a huff a puff. Expect killings, red spilling and flesh ripping. Impressive in it, the death bringing his head spinning. Just kidding, every word in his song's about two grown men dressed up as a bird and a dog.
Welcome to the Wolf and Owl podcast. Tom Davison, Romesh Ranganathan inside the ride. All the people up inside. A little bit of a history lesson for you today. I don't know how many episodes we're in, but let me tell you this now. This next episode's gonna be a banger. Make some noise for the Wolf Tom Davis.
Wolf time.
And make some more noise for the Owl Romesh Ranganathan inside the place.
This is the Wolf and Owl podcast.
This one, for the bit of bad boy. Oh, rewind. Once again. Tell your friend, Wolf and Owl, inside the ride.
Okay.
Wow. What you're kind of, that was a weird energy because you were like, at one point you seemed so sexy. And then you slipped into this sort of like quite sort of thirstiness.
Yeah, yeah. And also the other thing, I kept painting myself into a corner with like the starts of lines that I hadn't thought of the finish of.
Yeah. So. Is that how MCing works? Because I've never MC'd and I know you've done a bit of that kind of stuff. Is that how it works? Do you think of the line coming when you're freestyling, or do you have it all written, or how does it work?
I think it depends on how different people do it, but I know most freestyle MCs will have like a stock of time buying phrases that they throw into like if they're struggling for a rhyme and they want to think of something else, they want to buy themselves some time, they'll say something like, and it's like this and what, you know, like they'll sort of like do a little bit of a delaying tactic or whatever. But I mean, listen, I did do some rap battling and
rap battling.
There was this thing called the jump off. No, it was before the jump off, actually. It's called Battle Scars. And they advertised it in Hip Hop Connection. And they said, if you want to be an MC and you think you can freestyle or you can battle rap, then send in a tape or a recording. And they were like, it was like X Factor. Do you know what I mean?
For
battle rappers. So I sent in the tape and I made it through to the competition. But I was shit, man. Like, I hadn't, you know, I'd written some lyrics, but I couldn't freestyle really. And I, you know, people that freestyle and do those battles, they like practice. And I just didn't. I just had a few rhymes that I'd written. I'd done a couple of like bullshit verses. And then I just turned up and sort of hoped for the best.
Do you practice against yourself, so to speak? Like, so you'd be at home.
So, like, you know, it's like it's sparring. You might sit in your room and like start rapping about the stuff you're seeing around you. Do you know what I mean? Or, you know, you might, on a walk, just start rapping about, you know, trying to freestyle about everything you're, you know, like sharpening those skills in the same way that you do with comedy, I think, you know, like just sort of
I made it
sound like I sit there cracking jokes and stuff. But, you know, like you do it in life, don't you?
I can assure you that within my house, my wife would know I'm lying if I was like, oh, I'm constantly walking around joking about things. I'm walking around whinging and complaining about things, which I guess is the same.
But I tell you what I genuinely find, like what I really find, man, is like when I'm doing like misadventures and like any like panel shows or anything like that, if I'm doing stand-up at the same time, or even like doing podcasts or whatever, doing anything where you've got to like just riff and stuff, I just think it makes you sharper. In the same way that when I was a maths teacher, in September after we'd had the summer, my fucking mental arithmetic was shit. I'd like, you know, kids would ask me, "What's this?" And I'd go, "Why don't you work it out, mate?" Because I didn't know. Because like it would take you a while to.
Did you not get any pleasure out of doing sums and stuff?
Pleasure?
No. You just didn't enjoy it at all.
I'll tell you something. My dad was so quick with mental arithmetic and so good at maths. All my recollection of doing mental arithmetic is just the look on his face of sheer fucking disgust at the amount of time it has taken me to make calculations, right? And then the idea that I would go on to become a maths teacher was, you know, he had this conflicting emotions of being proud that his son was going off to be a teacher, but also being deeply worried about what that meant for maths education as a thing that I was teaching.
It's bizarre, though, isn't it? Because you can practice. Like, any job that I had, like, when I was scaffolding, I was an awful, what they call a fixer. I was a relatively okay. I was a pretty decent labourer. You know, I'm not going to sort of, like, I was kept around for a lot of the time because I was great. I had a great banter and I'd have a laugh. And I was quite lazy. But I remember people saying to me, look, there's no way you're going to get any better at fixing unless you practice, right? There's nowhere, unless you've actually got the fucking tools to practice, you've got to practice on site. And then everything about working on site is speed. If you're like, if you're on price or, you know, whatever, no one's got the time to teach you. So you literally sink or swim. So within the first week, if you can't fucking put scaffolding up quick, you're just destined to be a labourer forever.
Oh, God. But that's the thing with stand-up, though, man. Like, I always envy those. It's almost a cliche. It's been said so much. But music, as a band, you could practice and practice and practice. You do that at home. Stand-up, you can only practice in front of an audience. Do you know what I mean? And so it's funny, like, your most difficult gigs as a stand-up are when you start, because you're the shit. You haven't got any tools.
Yeah, yeah.
You ain't got any fucking... You haven't got any skill set at all. And the audience are the least engaged with seeing comedy. Do you know what I mean? It's like...
When you first started, right? I don't know, I'm going to throw myself under my foot. When I first started stand-up, way back when, I would practice on my own in my flat at the time. And I'd just practice doing, like, verbatim the stand-up that I thought I was going to do on stage that night. I was like, right, this is the act. This is a 5 minutes or whatever I've written. This is how it's going to go. I'm sort of essentially reading it out. And whenever I'd get on stage, it would just massively change. It would never go the same way that I'd read it out. But I used to sort of, and even my whole career now is, but I mean, I've worked with you so much. So much of my career has not ever been based around being confined to script or you know, this is what it is and this is what you've got to do, and take nothing away from people who work like that. But when I first started, that's how I thought you did it. Did you ever try stuff out at school with people? Did you ever sort of do that thing of going, right, I'm going to try a little bit of stuff here, sort of throw it into the mix of a conversation with other teachers?
Yeah, I remember, like, even when I was a kid, I didn't realise I was doing it at the time, but I was working up material. I was like trying to, but I think everyone does that. They tell an anecdote, you tell a story, and then you feel like that, you know, people often work like stand-ups when, like, they're just having conversations, where they feel like, oh, that story worked, I'm going to tell that again. And then the next time they tell that, they add a bit here and take a bit away there. And then you can tell when you see somebody, it's normally a bloke, telling a story that their long-suffering partner has had to hear 112 different fucking versions of. Do you know what I mean? As soon as this loud prick you've shackled yourself to finds a new audience for his story, he wheels it out.
I have that thing, like, I just really now go back and remember when I first started out and I thought, oh, I'm going to try this story out. And what I'll do is, like, I'll try it out at lunchtime at work, like, with a load of fucking builders and scaffolders. And you get, honestly, about three lines into it and someone will go, oh, fucking hell. You need to up the game, mate. If this is going to be a joke for fucking on stage, mate, you're done. And you know that, like, look, how I ever got on stage is, like, just my confidence was wrecked. I never got to the end of any stories because people would just interrupt or go, oh, yeah, I know, bloke, that. You know, it's just a... And you're like, oh, mate, this is... So you'd have to become so strong within yourself and so loud. That's the only way I've ever get into a
But I honestly think people that know you can't try stand up on them, man. Like, you know, I would write bits. I realized very early on that Lisa is, like, the worst fucking radar for trying. First of all, because that woman does not understand comedy. You know, she's a funny woman, but, like, she doesn't watch comedy. You know, she's not a good radar for that. But the other thing is, you know, she knows me too well. Do you know what I mean? I said this before, I think. Like, I'll try a bit out on her and she'll go to me, I'm sure the people who like you would like that. Well, I the people that like your stuff would get that. But I'll go to her, basically, what you're saying is you think that's shit.
Yeah. Oh, no, the worst one is if you're telling a story when they were there and then they go, no, it didn't happen like this. Oh. It happened like that. And you're like, yeah, no, but I've added this bit because it's funny. Or I've, you know, slightly changed this and I've added this bit from another story because it all works quite well. And, yeah, but that's not how it happened. And you're like, yeah, but how it happened was relatively boring.
Do you ever have a thing with, like, there are some people that just cannot tell a story? And, like, some of them are mates of mine, right? And, you know, like, these people that fucking include details that absolutely don't need including. They get they'll often tell you the funniest part of the story, right? You know, when somebody says the funny. Have I ever told you the bit where I ended up shaving my arsehole by mistake when I went to the doctors? No, you haven't. Okay, right. So a couple of months ago, I was starting to feel. And you go, okay, well, I know where this is going.
I know the end, mate. I know the punchline. I can guarantee the punchline is you shaved your arsehole. When you went to the doctor, the doctor said, why have you shaved your arsehole? You know, when you get someone who's, when they're telling you a story, they add all of the details of it. So a couple of years ago, I was doing a show with Jamie.
A lot of pressure on this anecdote now.
Yeah, Jamie Winston, who's a friend of mine, who is a brilliant actress. We're great company. So we're doing a show together, right? And during the time when we're filming, Glastonbury's also on. So Jamie's going to Glastonbury with some friends, right? So there's this facilities guy, I can't remember his name, but it was Norman or Derek or something. Anyway, he's like, oh yeah, I'm going to be at Glastonbury as well. Looking forward to it. It's going to be great. So they all went to he went to Glastonbury, she went to Glastonbury. On the Tuesday, they all came back and we're back at filming. And he sort of came walking past. I was like, I'm all in, how's Glastonbury? He said, no, that's great. Yeah, no, obviously, yeah, a lot of fun. Yeah, actually, I saw Jamie, actually. I was just walking through the campsite where, she had a trailer parked and she was renting one of the trailers that we hire out. And she popped her head out, actually, the door. And she said, oh, excuse me. I think the light's gone in my bathroom, in the trailer. So, I said, okay, do you mind if I come in and check it, if I have a look and check the thing? She said, no, of course, just come in, have a look and see where it is. So I go into the trailer and the first thing I do is I try the light switch. I've done it once or twice just to make sure the light's not working. And the light doesn't come on. So straight away, I know that I said, it could be a fuse or it could be the light bulb's gone. Give me a couple of minutes. I'm just going to go back to the store cupboard. I'm going to get a light bulb. I'm going to come back and, I'll check the light bulb. So she said, that's great. Fine. I left. I went to the store cupboard. I looked around. Lucky enough, we actually had the light bulb that was required. I went back. I knocked on the door. She answered. I said, oh, it's me. I just checked. And she said, I remember you. I said, oh, great. Went into the bathroom, made sure the light switch was still switched off. Put the light bulb in, switched it on, and the light worked. I said, well, thank God it wasn't the fuse. And she said, yeah, would that have taken longer? I said, well, obviously, yeah, we'd have had to change the fuses instead of the light bulb. I said, that's all. If there's any other problems, just give me a shout. And she said, no worry. And I didn't see her for the rest of the festival. And I was like, oh, right, yeah, okay. Brilliant. Nice one.
It's an interesting one. As I was into that story, I was thinking, that is a boring story. It's also deliberately boring. But you are also telling a very boring story in full on the podcast.
Yeah, no.
I'm sort of trying to figure out how.
But my favourite
works.
Thing is, right, about 20 minutes later, do you know Dan Taylor?
Yeah.
The actor. He's sitting with Dan Taylor telling exactly the story, verbatim, word for word.
Oh, my God.
And then he went, and Dan Taylor went, oh, right, yeah, oh, cool, yeah. And he went, yeah, that's what Tom said, Tom Davis, I told the story. And he was like, he had stories about loads of things, but they were always just really, really. He had one about the film remember Fury with Brad Pitt?
Do I?
And I remember saying he had a jumper that said Fury on it with a picture of Brad Pitt and stuff. I said, oh my God, you worked on Fury. What was it like?
Now, before you carry on.
Go on.
Is this before or after this Jamie Winston thing?
It's after, about a week after.
Okay, so this is all on you now because you know what he's like.
Yeah.
And you've gone up and asked the question. Yeah, but also, Rob, so everything you're about to say.
You know me well enough that I like to chat to people.
Yes, regardless of.
But now I've done the boring thing. If I've told you the punchline, I talked over you. So any really inquisitive listeners are going, I know what happens now.
Yeah, go. What happens? What did he say?
So I said, oh, you worked on Fury. What was it like? And he said, muddy. He had more to say about the Jamie Winston light bulb story than working on Fury for 6 months. which I find interesting as a person.
Now, what you've done is very nice there, because actually what happened is I fucked that story for you.
No, yeah, but this is something that obviously has been brought up before. And some people are actually messaging me calling rom-tupting? I don't know. It's like they put Romesh.
Okay. Yeah. What I'm going to say to you is, if you're going to make up a nickname for me, give it a little bit of fucking thought before you come on.
I didn't know we were going to be talking about interrupting gate here today. I think it was rom-tupting. I can't remember. Someone mentioned it in a thing.
Yeah, I'm bad at interrupting. I got a apologize.
Yeah, but you know what? In real life, I am a terrible interrupter, by the way. I'm an awful interrupter. But I also know that I sort of try and hold back a little bit. In real life, you're not an interrupter.
Do you know what the truth is? Is part of the reason I interrupt on this podcast is because when you're telling a story, I get genuinely interested in a detail that I think you might not come back to later.
Yeah, but I do that.
That's kind
of
where it comes from.
I do that. Last week, we did a whole thing where we were about to start talking about one thing. We never even got back to it.
Yeah.
Which we do quite a lot.
In fact, we got a note. We got a note from our editor, James Torrance, the fantastic James Torrance. So where occasionally he goes, I took this out because it was a fourth level of divergence from what you were talking about originally.
But you're actually quite... We're lucky enough to see each other at the moment, which I feel very blessed for. On Friday, it was lovely watching you really in your pomp. It was quite nice watching you sort of like work a room.
Here we go.
I watched you sort of like, you know, there was quite a lot of sweet, sweet energy.
What are you talking about?
So you had these two SAs extras that you were working with. It was nice watching you bond with these two guys throughout the day.
So what Tom's talking about is the fact that I did three episodes of the first series of King Gary, and now I'm in more of them. And Tom said to me, really enjoyed what you did. So, you know, really looking forward to having your second series. To give you an idea, all of my Friday was spent with essays.
No.
I was starting to feel like it's a prank. Where you and James DeFron, the director, are just going, he's not realised yet, has he? He's not realised that he's in the background of all of this.
I thought as well.
Can we talk about background acting for just a second?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to talk about. Because I think if you get a good background, it's very difficult to do.
Yeah, so we had a scene. I don't want to give any spoilers. But we had a scene where Tom is at front and centre, as he is for every fucking scene of this show. And I'm sort of in the background. So what you have to do, I'm with two other people, right? And we're sort of just having a bit of a chat, basically, is the best way to describe it. I'm sort of nervous about giving anything away about what's happening in the scene. So like, and we're having a bit of a raucous chat while Tom's getting on with, you know, being the star of the show, as he is in every scene of the sitcom. And you've basically got to silently sort of have a conversation and do that quite naturally. And it's actually quite hard to do. It's quite really hard to do for any amount of time. Like, I reckon 30 seconds, everybody could probably do that, I reckon. 30 seconds or so doing that. If you're at the back of a 5-minute scene, which we were, it's really difficult to sort of push that on anywhere new. and a lot of the times, I really did my best work when the camera, I realised, wasn't even fucking on us. Do you know what I mean?
It's when we did Paddington 2, me and Jamie had to we spent like 2 weeks with all these essays, and like to give it some, like, you know, that was quite, you know, King Gary sitcom. You were sort of doing it. Me and Jamie were sort of thrown in with like 400 essays, and a lot of people just thought that we were essays for a lot of it. So we ended up, and you end up just having like these long, like you say, these long sort of boring old conversations. One guy at one point was talking about sort of like he'd just broken up with his wife. He was after legal advice. And then someone down the fucking table from him started throwing in legal advice. It was actually like a really quite a weird community that he actually gets built. It's quite strange. I mean, for you, it's, I suppose, as well, though, the thing is you've got the fact that you're sort of quite recognisable. People knew who you were. No one knew him. Genuinely, people there thought me and Jamie were. So me and Jamie were sort of cast into a place where we were almost the lowest of the people there. Like, people just, because we hadn't done any films. So we both had our own TV shows. And we were like, oh, yeah. And they were like, what films have you done? We were like, oh, we haven't really done films. We've just done TV stuff. And they were like, yeah, I just got off Star Wars, mate. And like, we with the pecking order, me and Demetra, who's one of the best guys I know, one of the best actors and knocking about, he's incredible, were like the runts of the group.
It's fun, isn't it? Because I was chatting to the two guys that I was working with on Friday, and one of them had just come off Jurassic World. Mm. And then what I was really interested in, because I haven't done any like essays, by the way, is extras supporting artists. We should say that. I don't know how cool. So he said he was doing a bit where he's having to sweep up or something in the, I don't think that's a spoiler, is it? That there's some dinosaur shit hanging about.
Yeah, he was a caretaker.
Yeah. And I said to him, because I love the Jurassic World films, right? I love them. It's just sort of that thing of like working on a thing is really exciting. But he had no idea what the film, you know, aside from that day that he had sort of doing that background stuff, he saw nothing. He's got no idea what's in that, involved in that film or anything. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
also what I love, and this is when they've given themselves names in films. Because like, you can go on IMDb and they've given them, but they're clearly just a background artist, but they've given themselves.
But I think you'd give yourself. You remember when Phoebe did it in Friends?
Yeah,
she was in and she gave herself a little backstory. But that's what I would do.
Yeah, I think you'd have
give yourself a little backstory. Yeah, you got to come into this with like, you know, if you're playing a janitor sweeping up in the background, you're a bit disgruntled about it because you had a dispute about they wouldn't grant you your holiday that you wanted and you'd been booking to go away to Portugal for ages. Do you know what I mean? And you've been saving up for ages and then they said it's a key time for the company. You know, like some shit like that. Give it a bit of fucking fire, you know?
Have I ever told you when I had to audition for Mary Poppins?
Is it the second one?
Yeah, the first one. Not the first one, because I was... I was a bit of spunk in the first Mary.
Yeah.
The recent, more recent one.
Yeah, I auditioned for this as well. So let's see your right. Story there. I can tell you why.
Okay. I think Paddington had just come out and King Gary had just come out. Or maybe King Gary part. Anyway, my agent calls. I was really excited. We've got an audition for you for Mary Poppins, and I'm thinking, oh wow, that's incredible. How exciting! And the part is the milkman, right? So I'm like. A bit of you as someone who's been around a bit thinks it's slightly annoying that people don't think I can. But then I think maybe the milkman's a bigger part. I then get the sides, which is the script that I've got to read. And my line is, good morning, Mr. Banks. That's it. So on the sort of basis of my whole career, which was at the time, you know, Murder and Successful, Action Team, Paddington and other roles, no one in the casting department knew whether I'd be able to fucking realistically carry off that line of good morning, Mr. Banks, right? But anyway, I'm like, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. I thought I'll go along. But I did that thing of going, right, I'm going to give him a bit of a backstory.
Sure.
And so I go into the audition and there's a guy reading as Mr. Banks and he comes out and he's saying, oh, Jennifer, you must get ready for school or whatever. He opens the front door and I'm there and go, oh, good morning, Mr. Banks. And the guy goes, oh, you're not very happy. I said, well, in my head, the milkman's, he's worried about being a milkman. You know, it's a dying trade. You know, how many people get milk anymore? You know what I mean? You've got Waitrose orders. He's sort of got that on his head. He's got, is he going to be able to pay his mortgage? What else is he going to do if he can't be a milkman? And the guy said, oh, I think you're thinking too much about the role. I said, well, that's what our job is, isn't it? I mean, it's just one line, but let's give it some conviction. And he went, well, can we just raise it a bit? So, because like, oh, good night. Goodbye, Jennifer. Goodbye. Yeah, good luck at school. And he opens the door. I went, good morning, Mr. Banks. He was like, oh, okay. Right. I said, in my head now, it's his birthday. But no one in his round nose is his birthday. And I didn't get the part. Obviously didn't make a very convincing milkman. And then when I watched the film, they just cut the whole line, which happens quite a lot. Who did you audition for in that?
I had things getting cut. I had that happen to me in Miss You Already with Tony Collette and Drew Barrymore. Right? Oh, right. So there's a scene in this film where there's a charity auction. Well, I had to read for this part, but it wasn't really, they wanted me to just riff as if I was comparing a comedy gig or whatever. So I turn up and it was like, you know, pretty cool. I'd never done anything like that before. Yeah, you turn up on a film set, meet Drew Barrymore, meet Tony.
How were they, nice?
Paddy Considine was in it. It was great. They were really lovely. They were nice, really nice. Anyway, I did this whole thing and it's a classic thing of like, they go, can you work the tables and riff? And I'm doing it. And everyone's like, this sounds like I'm bigging myself up here, but it's like, felt like the stars are and people are pissing themselves. Like all the actors are going, oh my God, this is so funny. The stuff you're just coming out of. And I'm like, oh, thanks, thanks. Like, just, you know,
cause that's,
come off
but,
of it.
Yeah, but you also, when you get compliments, by God, you get cocky.
So start talking over Drew Barrymore's lines. Hold on a minute, love. I've still got a bit of improv to do it.
We've given him a glass of Kool-Aid now. Now he's pouring it himself.
Just Romesh, we do actually need to get the scripted dialogue out as well. If that's, I mean, I'm glad you're having a good time. But anyway, so like the stars aligned. I have a great day. Do you know what I mean? Come off.
Yeah.
And I, you know, pretty buzzing. Anyway, I get an email maybe 2 months later saying, you know, edits are difficult, just under the pressures of time, where to lose all your stuff. So now, every now and again, I will get a tweet or an Instagram message from somebody going, were you an extra in Miss You Already? Because there's a scene where they go to a party and you're sort of hovering in the background.
Hovering? But that's the worst thing you could... If you're noticeable as an SA in it, that means you're not doing your job properly.
Yeah.
Wow, man.
You know, I get a lot of people thinking I'm in a thing. Like, there's a fucking Smokey Robinson and the Miracles video that apparently I look like one of the Miracles. I get that a lot. There's a photo of George Lucas when he's in his 20s that apparently I look like. I auditioned for Mary Poppins, not for Milkman. It was for one of the security at the insurance or something like that. Like a bailiff or some shit like that. See, I've not watched the film.
See, I think I could have done that part.
Mate, can I genuinely tell you something? What? I promise you, I'm not just saying this. I don't know if you ever do this, and it's a really bad thing to do, but whenever I go up for anything like that, or even when I'm doing any job, what pops into my head immediately is people who I think would be better for this.
Yeah.
You know, I can't help it. And the truth is, I'm not just saying this because we're having this conversation now. I went into that thinking Tom Davis is like a shoo-in for this. Like, you know, I don't know if they're looking at Tom for this, but I just thought to myself, Tom Davis would be perfect.
How many lines did they have?
It's like four, something like that.
Wow, more
anyway,
than the middle.
So there's a bit where I've got to like, it was near the end of the film, and I've got to suddenly have a change of heart and let them in, right? I think it's something like that. I can't remember, it's such a long time ago. And also because of PTSD, I've tried to kind of blank out a lot of it, right? So I turn up to this office, and it's like, it's one of these things where, I don't know if this is what it was like for you, but where they send, the casting director is American, right? So yeah, she gives even less of a shit about you than if she was British, right? Because you're auditioning for a tiny part that she doesn't give a fuck about, and it's probably something, and also, she does it. Oh, it's some British comedian. British comedians. I don't even know who the fuck this guy is, but I've been asked to look at him for this. So I turn up there. I would describe the atmosphere, the vibe, as contempt, if I'm being honest with you. You know, like you sort of walk in and you feel like, I don't know if it's because that's how it is. You're turning up and you want to get this job, and they're looking at loads of people. And so that's kind of, I'm not an actor, and I haven't been in many situations where I've auditioned for stuff, but that's why my heart, just the small number of experiences I've had of that, my heart goes out to actors, man, because it is a job that is so chock full of rejection, man. Do you know what I mean? I think, you know, whatever people say, whatever people make jokes about acting not being a real job, the fucking mental robustness you've got to have to,
mate, you
work
think about
your
it,
ass
right,
off.
How many people go for jobs and go, I didn't get that job? You probably change jobs maybe, you know, every, say, even if you did it every 2 years and you went to a job interview, right? Some actors are doing that 3 or 4 times a week and getting knockbacks.
Mate, it's fucking,
like, that's, you know.
And before anyone tweets in, I'm not saying it's harder than fucking working on a building site or anything like that. I'm just saying that it's tough. Anyway, I turn up to I turn up to the audition and she goes, what I want you to do, she had the camera sat at the back of the room. She goes, I want you to show the sort of movement, how you'd move through this, because you have a change of heart and then you go, right? And so I was sort of like, I wasn't even aware of, I'd done very little acting at that time, right? So I sort of wasn't even aware of the camera position or any shit like that. So I just sort of, I sort of did it. And she goes, she stops it and she goes, yeah, no, you're not moving. And you need to sort of, I want you to move to show the movement of the thing. And she goes, and you're sort of panicked. And I want you to, so I go, all right. So I do it again. And I do, I'll be honest with you, pretty much the same thing as I did the first time, because I wasn't clear on the instructions. There's only so many times you can ask somebody to re-explain it, right? So, and she sort of goes, she sort of, I could see her just going, no, it's sort of, no, that's not what I need you. What I need you to do is sort of move almost in towards the camera, because you're sort of, it's a change of heart, it's a change of emotion, you know, in the scene. And I go, okay. I do it a third time, very similar to how I've done the previous two times, right? And at this point, she's like, no, I need you to, you've got to just move like that. You know, she's explaining it to me again. I go, all right. So then I think I've got to do something different, right? Because I keep doing the same thing over and over again. So I just really fucking went for it, right? So I do the lines, I move, and she honestly went like this, midway through it. No, 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 no.
Oh, no.
That is not, you're not even in the shot now. Like, it was so fucking, she like told me off. It was really awkward. And I just went, okay. She goes, anyway, okay, I think we've got it. And I
thought,
I can't be bothered to try and get it now, because there's no way.
If you don't mind, did you have a drink after that?
Mate, I phoned Flo, my agent, and I said to afterwards, I said to her, not only am I not going to be in Mary Poppins, I think I may have just burnt my bridges with Disney as a company.
Did I ever tell you when I went for that film about Jesus?
No, go on.
Oh my. Right, so you got anger. I'd say probably the only thing worse than anger is pity. So my agent calls me and like we're going for this thing where he's like, yeah, let's maybe try and do something a bit different, try and get a few more dramatic roles under your belt. So yeah, there's a film, I think it's, I'll have to look back, I think it's Joseph Fiennes, maybe one of the Fiennes is who's basically playing this Roman soldier who helps Jesus out when Jesus gets reincarnated. And I was going in for the role of John the Baptist, right? And so they said, like,
just, do you know, sorry, I know I'm interrupting.
No, go.
It's just the Tom Davis who I know and love. It's just so surreal what this job does sometimes.
Okay.
My mate, Tom Davis, is up for John the Baptist.
Right. I go into the audition.
So anyway, you're up for John the Baptist. I know that's how acting works. It sounds. I don't know why I'm finding it so.
Look, you know when you. So I don't know what it was like when you went in for security guard. When I went in, right, I'm like, number one, I'm thinking, I really tried for this. I'm not even gonna. I was like, this could be a big thing. It's a relatively decent cast. It's been made by a director who'd made some pretty fucking amazing stuff over the years. So I go in and I literally walk up the stairs of this sort of casting agency and. It's obviously they're doing all the John the Baptists in a day. I'm at the time probably about 23 stone. I'm carrying a bit of timber. Everyone else in there is six packed up. Like there's sort of Swedish sort of like Scandi looking guys with beards and sort of like really fucking handsome. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, you know, this is a fucking gear change completely. I look like Obelix amongst the whole fucking sea of asterisks. So they call me in and then there's this real like sort of heartbreaking scene where John's basically talking to this Roman guard about someone seeing Jesus knocking around, you know, after Jesus has been killed. And so I had to do an RP accent, which is, I don't know what it actually stands for, but it means that...
It's received pronunciation.
Yeah, so you have to kind of talk like that. That's how I did the whole audition, which as soon as I opened my mouth... I realised I got it wrong. I tried to pronounce every word. Right. Oh, I can't believe it. Jesus is back. Oh, no. Who saw him? What do you say? Down by the marketplace. Right. And rather than being annoyed, the big American director, the casting agent, and a couple of the producers all started giggling to themselves.
Oh, no.
Right. And the guy sort of, after the scene, was like, well, that was great. I'm not sure if this is supposed to be funny. It's quite a big moment in John's life. He, for the first time, has realized that Jesus, his best friend, is around. Do you want to try and do it less funny? So I thought what was funny was maybe sort of, I when you're a goon, you don't know what's goonish about you.
Yeah, so you've done it, and yeah, you go,
I've done
they've
it.
They've told me to be less funny,
yeah.
And I don't know what I've done that is funny.
Yeah,
right?
So because I'm a massive idiot, and so I go, okay, right, maybe what it was I was pronouncing the words wrong, so I really tried to pronounce them as much as I could, which skewed loads more laughter, right? And then, so they're all giggling to themselves, but they look sorry for me, because it's like, they thought the prank was on them. They thought I was, you know, like a Jackass character who'd come in to sort of, you know. So anyway, they go, you know, well, that was great. It was a real different way of you doing it. The bigger scene is the moment that John the Baptist, for the first time, reads out the Lord's Prayer, right? I was like, by the way, I said, I haven't read all the Bible.
Oh, my God.
I was trying to be serious.
Oh, my God.
I haven't read all the Bible, by the way. I used to go to Catholic school when I was younger, and I used to go to Sunday school, but I don't know all the bits of it.
Sorry, are you thinking you're auditioning to be an RE teacher?
No, but I tried to get on side, because at this point I'm thinking it's going badly. Unless they turn this into fucking... Yeah.
I can't act in this scene, but hopefully my knowledge of the Bible will get me into this.
I was thinking, if they do turn at some point, go, actually, let's make this a comedy, I'm well in the running. So if I show a little bit, like, I'm keen on the... So I said, I really didn't have any idea that John the Baptist even wrote the Lord's Prayer. And they were like, no, that's, you know, it's a part of the film that we've kind of... Some of this is like, you know, us, you know, our artistic integrity, and we've changed some bits. I went, oh, okay, cool. Oh, so
I actually feel embarrassed listening to it.
Yeah. So anyway, they said, do you want to go with the scene? So it's all around a campfire, and they're all sitting there, and John basically stands up and goes, hello, everyone. Sorry to interrupt. I've written some words for Christ who's back. Our Father, thou in heaven, hallowed be thy name. And the guy goes, hey, stop. What are you doing with your hand? Why are you looking down? You keep looking at the words. Do you not know the words? Or I know the words, but in my head, this is as acting as John. This is the first time he's read it out loud. So he's looking at his hand, because he's written it on his hand.
He's written on his hand?
Right. And they all literally stare at me with sympathy, like the sort of sympathy that I can imagine, like you look at like an old dog when it fouls itself in your living room for the first time and you realise it's on its last legs. Like, that's how they look at me. And the guy's like, oh, okay, right, yeah, all right. And I went, also, he's obviously a little bit worried about how it's going to go down, because it's the first time he's read it out in front of anyone. It's probably a bit like when Elton John first played your song. He sort of knows it's good, but he doesn't know how good it is. And they would just start laughing at me now. Like, really, like, just staring at me in disbelief. Yeah.
How are you feeling at this point?
Crushed, because I'd spent a week learning this. And this, I thought this was the game changer. I thought the reading off the hand, they go, we found our John. Anyway, so I muddled through the scene and like, you know, the Lord's Prayer, and I sort of didn't read it off my hand. And I sort of, at the end of it, sort of shook everyone's hand. And I was like, oh, thanks, and I hope to see you soon. No, I'd never see any of them again. I left the room, and as I left the room, a massive roar of laughter started. Inside the room, it was almost like, oh, it's been quite a boring day. This guy has just sort of lifted the room for a minute with his idiocy. And as I walked down, one of the other John auditionees grabbed my arm. He said, where was everybody laughing? Is it the comedy? And I went, yeah. No, they're looking for that. That was was yeah, the worst. That was honestly. I'm not even. I genuinely went to a pub in Soho and sat on my own and got absolutely leathered.
It's horrible.
It's a horrible feeling.
I had a thing. It's nowhere near as good as that story, but I had a thing where there was some show for Disney, right? And the director really liked me for it, right? It was like, she was like, really like, she basically got, I had a Zoom meeting with her and she said, basically, I want you to do this part, but we've got to get it, but you know, we've got to get over the line. So I need you to read self-tape or whatever. She goes, can you do that? And I said, yeah. And she goes, can you do me a favor? Can you do one version as you, like not as you, but with your natural speaking voice and one version American? She goes, do you think you can do that? Now, I can't do that. But I said, yeah, I could. And I figured I would practice and get to a point where I could, you know. So she goes to me, cool. And we'll just decide which version we'll go for. And I go, all right, cool. So she goes, all right, speak to you soon. Just send it and we'll just get it over the line. So anyway, I then self-tape. Who do you get Catherine to read lines in for you, do you?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of stories about that. So, yeah.
So Lisa is reading the lines in for me. Now, just to give you an idea, I love Lisa and she's incredibly supportive. On the occasions that I've asked her to read in lines to self-tape with her, she has looked at me in the same way she might look at me if I told her that I've been shagging one of our neighbours. You know, she absolutely does not want to do it, right? So, but she sort of begrudgingly does it. So I said to her, look, I know normally I just do these because I get said, you know, I'm not the caliber of actor that you are, right? So you get
But
what I mean, I know what you're about. But you're like a proper actor. We're the same
in the sense I think we're both. Like, I'd put you in a scene anywhere, and I know that you have got the. I don't want to interrupt, right? I would say this as much as you as an actor, and this is having done a lot with you and King Gary, watching your capabilities as an actor. I would say that. If you were put in a scene doing anything, you would smash it. You would be able to do it. But
I love you,
like myself, but like myself, there's a whole different thing when you're auditioning and you're scripting and you're not in the moment. That is a whole different fucking thing. It's a whole different vibe that people, like genuinely, when you watch a film, right? I always watch films sometimes and think, I've auditioned for that part and I didn't get it, right? And I that's fine. That's the game we're in, right? But sometimes I think that's just because I'm number one, I'm dyslexic. I have an awful time reading, right? So genuinely, I've got to work double hard to just get the words, make sense of them. Do you know what I mean? That's why nearly everything I do is my own stuff. And when I even do my own stuff, I fucking wing it. Like, that's why Murder and Successful was so fucking great, because I didn't have a script. Do you know what I mean? When you're dyslexic, it's a fucking hard thing to sit there and go, and that has to sit with. So yeah, Catherine is. I had to sit with Catherine and really go through it and go through it and go through it and go through it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Lisa is basically, every single time we do a take, I know that I'm one take closer to her losing her shit with me about doing this, right? So, what she'll do is, when it's time for us to self-tape, she'll make sure she is dressed like to go to bed or to have a nap, or, you know, like she'd be in a dressing to basically really sort of hammer home the point that she has been fucking hugely inconvenienced by this, right? Because so basically a lot of these that I get sent are like, you'll get sent something like, this is a shot in the dark, but it'd be great if you got it. They want you to be the guy that polishes Thor's shoes in Ragnarok. Do you know what I mean? And there's a few lines in there, it's a great. So it's like a fucking such a long shot, right? Yeah. But you know, they might like you and put you in. So she's used to me doing shit like that, right? And it never comes to anything. So this one, I said to her, look, the director has said it's basically my thing.
Yeah.
I've got to do one version British and one version American, right? So I go to her, Lisa, I'm going to do the American one first. And I start doing the American one that I've practiced, by the way, just to give you a bit of context. In this, I've been watching how to pick up American accents. I've been practicing all week before we do this thing, right? Start doing it. And Lisa starts looking away. Right, as I'm doing the lines. And then as we get further into it, she starts like really turning away from me. And then we get to the end of it and I go, how was that? And bearing in mind, I want you to imagine you're doing this thing that you've been practicing, you're feeling a bit self-conscious about. And as you're doing it to the person, who's your life partner, by the way, right? She starts willfully turning her, like almost fucking like owling her head away from me completely, right? Get to the end of it. I said to her, right, I wasn't quite happy with that. Can we do another one? And she goes, can I just say something and don't get angry? And I go, yeah, all right. She goes, is there any way that I can do this without having to look directly at your face?
Oh, lovely, sir. Also, we should throw into the mix at this time, right? Lisa is a drama teacher, right?
Yeah, she is.
So Lisa knows her minerals. And Lisa, by the way, has got more knowledge of auditions and knowledge of script reading and how a script works than either me or you.
Correct, right? So she goes to me, I'm really sorry, but I don't think I can look at you while you're doing that accent and not start laughing. And she goes, and then I'm struggling to give the lines back to you because I'm trying not to laugh. I said, well, this doesn't bode massively well. But, you know, it was a comedy, so this might be all right. Do you know what I mean? But I don't think the comedy is supposed to come from the guy's accent being unconvincing. I think that's a very fucking meta. You know, we're not doing hello, hello for Disney. Anyway, I do it again. And Lisa's at this point. So we do the rest of the self-tapes with Lisa faced completely. She's basically turned her chair away from me. Right? So she's looking completely away from me. I do the rest of the thing. Then we do the British one. It's absolutely fine. Send it to the director. Because at this point, I'll be honest with you, I'm thinking, I'm thinking what's going to happen is that they're going to go, let's get him to do the British one. Do you know what I mean? Because, you know, it makes sense, right? So I sent it to her. She goes, yeah, I definitely think we should go with it. I love the British one loads more. Let's do the British one, right? So I go, okay. Anyway, it turns out, and she didn't say this to me, but she sent me quite a long, detailed email about it. Whatever I did in the American one was so deeply unconvincing that I'd managed to negotiate my way out of a dead cert booking.
Wow.
I was a shoo-in, right? All they wanted was a chat to see if I was up for it. And from that point of having a definite job offer, I'd managed to be so shit that I'd managed to de-hire myself for that job.
No, but also you weren't that shit as English one. It was American Rom that was intolerable.
Yeah, I guess it was like if they'd watched the American one first, then your first impression is so fucking tarnished.
You're not bringing it back from there.
You can't.
The thing of trying to do it, because Catherine's really supportive, like really, she genuinely is incredible when it comes to stuff like that shit, and really helpful when it comes to learning, you know, like just helping with bits. But a couple of years ago, is it Mindhunter or something? Have you seen the Netflix show when it's all about the serial killers?
Yes, yeah.
So, you know the guy Kempner in that, the big guy?
I don't know the character, but I know of the show, but yeah.
So, I'd auditioned a couple of times for that. Like, they liked what they'd seen. I did a tape. So, I spent like 3 weeks. I was like, you know what? I'm really going to fucking... I'd sort of looked into how, like, you know, like people that I respected, like Hardy or De Niro or, you know, Charlize Theron was executing this show. I looked into like what their process was, or Matthew McConaughey, whatever, of like becoming someone when you're playing a real life person.
Yeah.
So like, you know, I read like how Charlize Theron, when she did Monster, so I was like, you know, I was going to read about a person fucking, you know, I watched all this fucking stuff about how he, you know, watched him move, like his movement, how he talks and stuff.
Yeah.
Spent ages on my laptop just talking as him, just sort of like down the lens and all that. Time came to do the thing, and exactly the same thing has happened to you with Lisa. I started doing it with Catherine, and this was not a comedy by any means. And Catherine just started absolutely wetting herself. And I'd also done that thing of like going, right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to just learn it. And then when it comes to the day of, I'm going to do it the sort of day before. So otherwise what's going to happen is if I do it before the deadline, what I always think, if you do it sort of a week before and send it off, you're going, oh, I've had a week where I could have really fucking made that better. But if I really train up to that moment, and she just couldn't get her shit together. And it was like, I'm like, look, you can't laugh in this. Like, at least with your one, if you're laughing at a Batman, they go, oh, yeah, actually, maybe he is funny.
Yeah.
Like, if you're playing a serial killer who's describing how he's murdered like fucking like a housewife in 1972, it's not the fucking thing. You know,
I'd argue murdering a housewife in any year is not funny.
Yeah, I mean 1972 specifically, but
particularly unfunny in 1970. You know, murders in the '70s were particularly unfunny, I thought.
And I genuinely sent it to my agent, and he's like, "Is there a way of getting the laughing out of the background?"
Oh no!
And I just knew that, And when I watch the show now, I watch the guy. I mean, the guy's incredible, and you've got to make your peace that might just not be your fucking you might not be able to just go into that serious.
Mate, I got into this thing where listen, I don't want to give a bad impression, Lisa, particularly if she now listens to this podcast, but she's very supportive. And I love her to bits. Yeah. I love you, Lisa, to bits. And often I'm asking her in sort of in the evenings to do it after you've done it. So I don't want to cast any aspersions on her. But I would say that it has got to the point where I'm so unkeen on getting her to self-tape with me that I've actually taken to recording the other lines myself and just interacting with the recording.
That's the worst thing you could do, though. Don't. We could do them together on Zoom.
Oh yeah, should we do that?
I don't think.
Listen, as much as I love you, and as comfortable as I am with you, and I've got to say, you know, half the reason that I have as much fun acting on King Gary is because it's such a relaxed atmosphere. I don't know if I'm comfortable enough with you. That would be a real test of our relationship.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For you to see me out there.
What we could do is we could do some of our favourite scenes from films together.
That's a great idea.
And just do like pick like we do Training Day.
That's a great idea. We should do. We should start doing it at the end of these. At the end of episodes, we should do like a scene together.
Just print it out.
Yeah,
I'll be Denzel Washington. You can be Ethan Hawke.
Okay, I'm not massively bothered by that. It's the fact that you've obviously already delineated that in your mind.
But I'm going to be more convincing Alonso than you.
You just said I could do anything. You literally, like a few minutes ago.
But also, mate, if anything, I've given you a chance here because Ethan Hawke's the harder part. You've got really fucking, like, he's vulnerable. He's quite sort of pathetic, apart from like two of them, because Alonso's the cool one. So, in a way, it's like I haven't really got I'm probably actually almost playing myself in some ways.
The smile that plays across your lips when you're about to put the boot in really is a thing of beauty, you know that?
No, I'm not being horrible. I'm just. Look, what I'm saying to you is, look, what we could do is we'll do Training Day. I'm Alonso, you're Ethan Hawke, right? I can't remember the character's name now. Hoyt, Officer Hoyt. Right, that's you, yeah? And then
do something from Back to the Future, please?
Yeah, I'll be Marty McFly.
Fine, I like Doc Brown, so.
Yeah. You'd actually
be we could do the scene where I'm playing your mum back in 1955 and we get off with each other.
No, I tell you you'd be amazing as Marty's dad.
Beth.
That's actually really good.
Yeah, thanks, man.
McFly.
I love Back to the Future so fucking
much. My favourite
much.
Is Back to the Future 3.
Okay. Are you saying that to piss me off? You're saying
I
that to piss me
off. I genuinely
love
that movie. Well, I'm not saying that to piss you off. I genuinely love that film. I obviously love the first one. The second one, I could take it or leave it. Third one, I love.
Why is the third one the best for you?
Number one, I love cowboys. And also, I just think there's
it's a weird thing to say, just as a...
No. Right. I love cowboys, but also I like the fact that it's... No, but it's also that feeling of, like, the end of Doc and Marty's adventures.
Sure.
Like, there's something I find quite sweet about that moment where it all sort of... I mean, I think actually...
Find something sweet about the moment where Doc sort of doffs his hat as he travels off with his wife on the time-travelling train?
Yeah, I think it's lovely. Mm. Even now, and I'm holding it together, the bit is like where Marty's like, where are you going now? And he's like, well, we're probably going to go here and then we're going to go there. And, well, it's been a great adventure and all that sort of stuff.
Two things I'll say there. One, didn't really feel like you were desperately trying to hold yourself together or you're struggling there. And secondly, it's quite clear you absolutely got no idea how that scene goes.
No, I haven't seen the film for like 15 years. You can't.
So why go in to quote it?
No, just in case anyone listening hasn't seen the film and doesn't know the ending.
No, but you can't start going into the fucking scene. At what point during that sentence did you realise, I don't know any of the words from this fucking scene at all?
It's honestly one of the most beautiful scenes in film history, I think.
What an incredible thing
right.
to say.
That and the ending of series one. Film one. Where we're going, we don't need roads.
We don't need roads.
That's so cool, isn't it?
Oh, God. I love it. Back to the Future 1, great. Back to the Future 2, great. Back to the Future 3, great. It's a great trilogy.
I always think sort of, you know, the only one, obviously, Godfather 3 is Bobbins, but, you know, Star Wars, the original Star Wars 3 was great. That's where I left
you,
it.
Don't talk about Star Wars, man. Please don't talk about Star Wars.
What about Indiana Jones? Third one's great.
Do you know what? So the third one is great, but let me tell you this. Did you watch Kingdom of the Crystal Skull?
Yeah.
Right. So at the end of that, spoiler alert, if you haven't fucking watched it, I mean, I shouldn't have to give a spoiler alert at this stage. It's aliens, right? It's an alien civilization, right? And I remember sitting there going, this is a bunch of bullshit. Everyone said that. This is a bunch of bullshit, yeah. Right? Except we all loved The Last Crusade. And in The Last Crusade, it's one of the fucking knights that's been sat
more realistic,
there.
Mate.
What? How can that be more realistic than aliens?
Because, we've dabbled with religion probably quite a lot in this episode, more than we usually would with the story earlier. But
no, I knew which story you were referring to, yeah.
Yeah, so... But also
the John the Baptist thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
You prick. We know that those soldiers of the Lost Ark, that they, you know, they're in the Bible somewhere, right? So there's more evidence that they were around because of the Bible than aliens.
Okay, I don't want to get into a debate now. Like, we're, what, an hour into this, and you're now starting a debate about existence of aliens versus the existence of God. That's not my what I'm debating. What I'm debating is, has a man been in a cave for that whole amount of time?
Yes, because he drank the magic juice.
Without, what, taking a shit or a piss anywhere?
He obviously had a shit. He had a little toilet in a cave at the back, probably.
I can't imagine what that cave would smell like. How can Indiana Jones be expected to focus on what fucking chalice to drink from when it just is absolutely minging in there?
But that's a good thing to sort of finish on in a way. It's like, I mean, I know we often all roads lead to Rome with us, but do you ever watch films and think when have they even been to the toilet? Especially Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I do. I remember watching The Jungle Book and wondering how smelly that little sort of loincloth must be.
But The Jungle Book, out of all of them, I've never thought about, because that is, you just go, he's probably just gone in the jungle somewhere.
No, but I'm talking about that. Does he launder that?
I probably watch it. They washes it, like when you wash stuff in the river, it'll clean.
It's, yeah, absolutely. One of the things, actually, talking about that, is Mandalorian. In The Mandalorian, somebody refers to going to the bathroom or wanting to go to the toilet, and I'm pretty sure it's the first time ever that sort of anything like that is ever referred to in the Star Wars universe.
I mean, if anyone know, you'd know.
Okay. I know that was an insult.
That's a massively, that's a compliment. But one thing you love is Star Wars.
But the thing is, it sort of raised more questions than it answered, really, because then I started thinking, well, we don't, you know, if you're in a bar in Star Wars, like, what urinal do you have?
But also, I just thought of this is the least sexiest thing that you ever say to Lisa, is that her coming in going, oh, Rom, I'm going to put dinner on, what are you up to? No, just a curious thing, really. I thought earlier today that I'd never really noticed anyone mentioning going to the lavatory in the Star Wars films or within the whole of the stratosphere of Star Wars. So I've gone back to watch them all from the beginning to see if anyone...
This is the worst conversation I could have with Lisa. She comes in, what have you been up to? Well, I was watching Star Wars and they mentioned going to the toilet. And I'll be honest with you, for me, it raised more questions than it answered, really. You know, what kind of urinal do they have in there? How do they know that all of the different species would take a piss in the same way? Or even if they do piss.
The door closes and a car speeds away.
Lisa, before you go, we've got to do a self-tape.
It's a toilet attendant in fucking on off.
Right, it's time to go. We normally get to at least one email, but we've sort of digressed and chatted so much. I would say, look, you know, I know we haven't got into the habit of reviewing our episodes as we record them, but I would say, you know, it was, I hope it gave you an interesting insight into.
I think this was a more genteel one, maybe.
It was a genteel one. Yeah.
And also, what I always like to describe as a peek behind the curtain.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Tom, can you, in your own inimitable way, take us out of this episode?
Talking, talking, talking happy talk. Talk about the things you'd like to do. You've got to have a dream. If you don't have a dream, how are you going to have a dream come true? That's South Pacific, one of my favorite musicals. But it's funny when you make your stand in life and wonder who you're going to be. You know, are you going to be a strong person or a weak person or fragrant or fertile? The truth of the matter is, acting is a thing that we do. We stand up as the lights shine upon us, whether they're on stage or on screen, and we try and portray something we're not. But the most important thing of acting isn't to portray the things we're not, to give a convincing performance. It's to use the things within and mold them into a different person to make it believable. So it doesn't matter if you're an Ewok just in the background or one of the Godfather's hitmen who doesn't really have a name. Or maybe you are a busboy on a bus in Back to the Future. The truth of the matter is, there's no small performances. Just people who put the ilk into the scene to make it grand. Go forth, act your way. And remember, life is a movie. Perform, my friend.
I lost count of the number of corners you painted yourself into with that little one that time.
Yeah, that was hard to get off.
I don't know how many times I have to tell you not to talk about Star Wars, but you insist and you keep fucking up. It's not Ewok, okay? It's Ewok.
Ewoks do sound better though. I'm probably in my
head. Don't fucking. Don't.
I've got Ethan Hawke and Ewoks in my head. So
okay, but that doesn't excuse.
Yeah.
What you said. So
yeah. Well, anyway,
listen, guys. My voice has got this. Sorry, I just sort of. It's
we. You're quite a sexy way about you today.
Let's close it out like this. This has been the Wolf and the Owl, taking you another journey.
God bless.
Chit chat. Take care. See you next time, probably Friday, for the bonus episode. Peace out.
If you have a problem, opinion, feedback, or anything at all, please email us at wolfowlpod@gmail.com. That's wolfowlpod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, mainly because we don't have any content ideas. Thank you.